James, two defenders on him. To Caldwell Pope inside. He's tied up by Green. Throws it back up top. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good! LeBron James from downtown as the shot clock expires. A desperation heave, and the Lakers are up three.
Some may call it luck. Some may call it skill. Whatever you may say, the Lakers, that was the dagger. That broke a 100-100 tie. LeBron with the three, a 34-footer. Over Steph Curry on a scramble play. The Warriors played great defense, but sometimes great players make great plays. Kind of like Curry made a great, unbelievable three against basically a triple team right before halftime last night. So Curry got a dose of his own medicine. LeBron doing it to Curry last night. Lakers win 103-100. LeBron after getting hit in the face or in the eye by Draymond Green. Nothing intentional. LeBron claimed that he was seeing three of some things, and he aimed for the one in the middle. Whether you believe that or not, I don't know. My son doesn't. My son is a freshman in high school, and we were watching this game, and he was just getting so tired of LeBron's antics. He just, my son was just, he was sick of it. He was like, oh my gosh, he's not dying. He's acting, he's flopping, he's this and that and so forth. My son didn't like it. And I said, well, you know, other players flop too. Other players try to sell it. It's smart if you can get the official to buy it and so forth and so on. And so my son, who's younger, is not a big LeBron James fan. I, myself, am a fan of LeBron James. I respect this game tremendously. Luka Doncic was one of my favorite players, but now that I watch him more and more, I am getting so tired of him complaining about every single call. European players typically seem to complain more, but LeBron, it's like whenever, it's like you're not capable of committing a foul because you do. And he got away with a big-time foul on, I think it was Poole driving to the bucket. It was a great move. He was going in, and somehow that wasn't a foul. And I do love Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, too, and Mike Breen on the TV broadcast, but especially Jeff Van Gundy. He just says it as it is. He's like, he doesn't care if it's LeBron or whoever. He's like, that's a foul. How is that not a foul? And right away, my son and I are like, because it's LeBron. And then my son goes, LeBron, that's why he goes, that's why I don't watch the NBA. The star players, he goes, LeBron gets the calls. I said, son, Jordan got calls too. Mm-hmm. I said, Jordan got calls. Steph Curry gets calls. Kevin Durant gets calls. Stars get calls. They do. I mean, quarterbacks get these phantom, you know, shots to the head penalties. Ask the Chiefs against Tom Brady in an AFC title game at Arrowhead. You know, Mahomes sometimes doesn't get hit very much, and somehow it's a roughing the passer. It happens. Star players get calls. You might not like it, but it's true. And I think in some cases they've earned it. LeBron's been in this league for a very long time. I don't like it, but I get it. I understand the nature of the beast. And as long as you have humans involved, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But watching the game last night, it was a great game. Warriors were in control, but I all along I thought the Lakers were going to win. I never doubted one second the Lakers weren't going to win. And it came down to what we talked about yesterday, is that the Lakers have more of a supporting cast. And mm-hmm. Anthony Davis struggled, but then came up big in the fourth quarter. He had 25 points, 12 rebounds. LeBron, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. And that game-winning three on a scramble play. The Lakers will be the seventh seed. The Suns will be the opponent. They're the two. The Warriors, Steph Curry did everything he could last night. 37 points, 6 3-pointers. He was very efficient. Draymond Green played great defense. The Warriors' defense was better than I thought it was. Andrew Wiggins played well. And it was just a really well-played game. And at the end of the day, a great player made a great shot. And that's really the difference. It's as simple as that. And then on the last possession, when the Warriors had 2 seconds to throw the ball in, the Lakers' defense was sensational. Mm-hmm. And there was nobody open unless you want to try to skip it all the way across the floor to the opposite side, which is really tough to do in the NBA with a guy guarding the inbounder. And that was just tremendous defense. There wasn't anybody open. My son initially said, why did they force it to Curry? I'm like, there was nobody else open. We replayed the play. There was nobody mm-hmm. open. The Lakers, great defense. Now, that's where if you had Klay Thompson healthy,
yeah,
that changes that play a little bit. But he's not, and the Warriors lose. Not the end of the world if you're a Warrior fan, though. They're still alive. They will play on Friday against the Grizzlies, who knocked out Dusty Spurs, 196. So the Spurs are done. Dusty, I think, is actually happy about that.
Yeah, not disappointed in the least bit.
They'll get the 11th. I think they'll be slotted 11 or 12 in the draft.
You're 33-39. It does you no good to win those games mm-hmm. and ruin your draft status.
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. So the Grizzlies move on. Ja Morant versus Steph Curry. It'll be a good game on Friday. If the Warriors play like they did last night, I think they'll win that game. But you never know. That'll be at the Warriors' home court. And the Lakers now move on to take on the Suns, as I mentioned. And then NBA games here for Thursday tonight. It's a play-in game, man. This is the elimination game. It's like game seven of a series. It's just a one-game situation. Pacers at the Wizards. Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. The Wizards have the star players. Pacers are a workmanlike team. 7 o'clock tonight on TNT. Wizards-Pacers. The winner gets the Philadelphia 76ers in round one. The loser is done for the season. And as we said on Friday, 8 o'clock on ESPN, the Grizzlies versus the Warriors. So that updates you on what took place in the NBA yesterday. But it was a game that did live up to the hype. I didn't think it would. I thought the Lakers were going to cruise in this and win by double digits. But they didn't, and I was pleased. And now I got less sleep than I would have liked because I stayed up to watch that. All right, local sports. Dusty, a heartbreaker for Beloit softball team. What a game they had yesterday against Hoisington. And then we have an area team that's going to state baseball, which is pretty exciting for them. So I'll let you cover the local angle from yesterday.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I had the game tracker on the whole time, and Hoisington Central Plains of Beloit, nobody wanted to budge and get on the board. Pitching was outstanding for both teams, and Hoisington Central Plains ended up getting one run in the 10th inning to win it 1-0. They're in the semifinals of that 3A regional, which was played in Great Bend, hosted by Larned. Cassidy Nixon for Hoisington Central Plains actually had a no-hitter through six innings, and Miley Brown broke that up with a first hit for Beloit, the single in the top of the seventh, but Beloit couldn't get anything out of that. So the bottom of the seventh, Hoisington Central Plains had a runner on first and third with two out in the bottom of the seventh there and couldn't get on. And then had runners in the eighth, couldn't get on. Beloit's Odell came through and really got out of some jams. But then in the 10th inning, it was a double by Molly Steiner. And then Gracie Elward drove her in for a walk-off win for Hoisington Central Plains. And you look at the numbers for Odell, she went 9 1/3 innings, had 17 strikeouts, and gave up just 5 hits, but couldn't get the win. And that's how good Cassidy Nixon was for Hoisington Central Plains, who allowed just one hit the entire 10 innings that she pitched there for Hoisington Central Plains. So again, they win it 1-0. Beloit finishes their season outstanding record of 17-5 in 2021, but just short of making it to the championship game of the regional. Hoisington Central Plains and came back and won over Russell Victoria 5-1 in the championship game. So they're headed off to the 3A state tournament in Manhattan next week. Hoisington is there in 3A softball. As Wade said, there was a local league team that has made it to state in 3A baseball. It was Minneapolis winning over Hoisington Central Plains 3-2 in the semis yesterday at the TMP Marion Regional in Hayes, and then they bounced back to win over the host school TMP Lacrosse 7-3 in the championship. Minneapolis now 15-6 on the season, and they too are headed to 3A state in Manhattan coming up later next week, the 27th and 28th of May. And Minneapolis again headed to the state tournament in 3A class. 4A regional semifinals yesterday. Concordia saw their season come to a close with a tough 7-6 loss in 11 innings to Augusta in Clay Center yesterday. So look at what happened. Regional baseball and softball. You can find all the brackets and results for baseball, regional, and softball at ncksports.com. Also there at the website, you can read about our athlete of the week. That's J.C. Bath, the Lincoln senior, as she's continued her great senior campaign, swept the individual league championships in the distance races last Thursday at the Northern Plains League meet in Mankato, winning the 800 and 234.96, 1600 in 536.26, and the 3200 12.24.48. She's competed in 7 regular high school meets this season, bringing home the gold in every race she's run. 7 golds in the 1600 meter run. She has 6 golds in the 3200 and has claimed 4 golds the past 4 meets that she's been running in the 800 meter. So that's a total of 17 gold medals this spring for J.C. Bath. And next up is the 1A regional meet coming up in Mankato tomorrow. And she is the top runner in the state as far as time, not just in the region, but in the state in the 16 and 3200 meters. And definitely is a favorite to win regionals coming up tomorrow, and also to win state coming up next week if everything goes the right way for J.C. Bath, our NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. So again, regional track is coming up tomorrow, so we'll have a preview of that coming up on our sportscast tomorrow, and we'll have results that we'll be giving throughout the afternoon, starting a little after 3 o'clock tomorrow from Class 1A in Mankato. We'll get results funneled in from 2 2A in Hill City and 3A in Beloit as well. And get those to you on our reports every half hour after 3 o'clock as well on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. So getting closer to that regional track and field meet coming up tomorrow. I'll be stationed in Mankato and ready to roll for regional track. Hopefully we can get a lot of our area athletes to the state tournament, or the state meet, I should say, coming up next weekend.
Yeah, we will preview that coming up tomorrow. And as Dusty said, reports starting at 3 o'clock and every half hour thereafter until everything is in the books tomorrow. Hopefully the weather will cooperate as well. So we did some video streaming of softball this year, but so softball does not have do they have a pitch count?
They do not.
They do not have softball.
I don't believe
pitch
there's
count.
Even any kind of pitch
I
count.
I gotta say, I figured there wasn't pitchers are going 10 innings.
Yeah, and they can go pitch 10, and if in a doubleheader, like they could pitch 10, and if their second pitcher gets in a jam, they can come back in and pitch the next game. It's a different motion.
Oh, I know that.
And I think that's why it's just not as taxing.
It's not as taxing on the shoulder and arm. I get it.
Pitch count.
I get it.
But it does.
But it's a team sport to where a pitcher controls so much. Now imagine if Justin Verlander could do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like it doesn't even sound fair. Well, Madison Bumgarner kind of did it against the Royals in 15. But at the same time, I mean, if a pitcher can pitch, they can pitch, they can pitch. But so can some guys in baseball could pitch every single day in high school, and some guys obviously can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's rules to protect those kids. But it's just interesting softball. And I know it's not as taxing, don't get me wrong, in regards to the arm movement. I do get that. But I do think as a team sport, and a pitcher has so much control over a game, whether it's baseball or softball, then a team sport is your team, and I'm not trying to knock Hoisington or Beloit here, but is a team really all that good if a pitcher is doing almost all the pitching?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I mean is that person is so good, they carry you, and they're that great.
Yeah.
And then you never know. I mean, it kind of punishes teams that have two or three good pitchers, right? See what I'm saying?
Sure.
Compared to one great one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just something that's interesting because it's supposed to be a team sport. And, yes, I know the pitcher, you know, can't do all the hitting too.
Mm-hmm.
But a pitcher has a ton. I mean, if a pitcher is so good and they strike out, you know, most of the people they face, and they can just keep pitching forever, then there is no other pitcher needed, or except from every once in a while. And then another team might have a really deep team that has three really, really good pitchers, but not a great, great pitcher, and they're negated, even though they're the better, deeper team, mm-hmm. but because of one person's arm. And I get it. I mean, I remember the D-backs, basically because of two arms, Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling are able to beat the Yankees, although you did have relievers that came in. And you obviously needed hits and this and that. But it is an interesting dynamic when you look at it. And I've seen that in college. We talked about it. Some gals have thrown 160, 170
women's
pitches.
College World Series.
Yeah.
There's teams that win the title based on a pitcher.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's all on one player for the most part. And
I mean, I'm not saying that those teams aren't good enough.
Sure.
If a pitcher struggles to go ahead and win anyway, right?
Right, but they're so dependent.
If they made it that far, they're probably really good.
But they're so dependent on that pitcher.
There's just people that you can think of Cat Osterman.
You can go
all the way back to anything to those people. Kalani Ricketts.
Oklahoma had a pitcher how many years ago? Yeah, she was dominant all the time.
I mean, nobody could touch her.
Right. It's just a different thing.
Different dynamic.
You know? I'm not criticizing it. But that's why
these people, these teams too, when these girls get into high school, they want to label their pitchers right away, mm-hmm. and they're working their craft like crazy because they know that you can win games, you can win titles just based on
having one great
outstanding
pitcher.
Pitching, and even just one of them, right?
Yeah, right.
And you know, they usually have two of them ready because you're playing doubleheaders, so they don't have to have one pitcher pitch both games. But you've got an ace just like any other, like baseball or whatever, that goes out there and takes care of the taxing stuff.
Well, I've heard about Cleodel for a while about how good she's going to be, and she's really
good.
She
was outstanding
yesterday, but just
went up against somebody that was just a little bit better in the end.
I guess, but they're splitting hairs there. They both are unbelievable.
I mean, 17 strikeouts and you don't win, and you only give up one run the whole game.
And, like, and you go, in the 10th you go inning. 9 1/3 without giving up a run. That's and you lose. That's hard. Hard, no doubt, but that was a bit pitcher's duel yesterday between Beloit and Hoisington. Tough way to go out, but, you know, they did the best they could, and then Hoisington's got a great pitcher, and, you know, Beloit, when they went to state softball a couple years ago, they won in a seventh inning or maybe extra innings, and they won in awesome, exciting fashion and heartbreaking for the other team that they played. I remember that. So You know, that's the difference. It's very thin.
Oh, yeah.
That room for error, it's razor thin, even at the high school level. So congrats, Bullitt, on a very good year. Minneapolis baseball going to state. That's pretty exciting for them. And I believe it's the second straight time they're going to state, if I read that right on social media. Of course, last year, COVID ruined all of that. Minneapolis has a good group of seniors, so that's cool. And it was cool to see these teams that making it to state in baseball and softball, because there was nobody that made it last year.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to see those teams get that opportunity again. So that's pretty cool. The Royals, pretty cool that they were able to win again last night. Michael Taylor was a big reason why.
Gutierrez runs, and that's hit well. Deep left center field, and gone! Oh, man. That ball's hit well to deep center field. Taylor goes all the way back, and Taylor makes the catch! Oh, man, what a play! The run will score, but Michael A. Taylor ran a mile and made the defensive play of the year.
Michael A. Taylor, a two-run homer off of Corbin Burnes, who has been just phenomenal this year for the Milwaukee Brewers. He is able to hit the home run to get the Royals going. Then he robs what would have been a home run, and that kept the game at 3-2. There was a sac fly on that play, but that was a big save there by Taylor. And then Jorge Soler, he ends up getting the game time with a blast, tie it at 3. And then the Royals played small ball. What a concept. I didn't know it existed in Major League Baseball. But the seventh inning, Soler with the big blast, and then small ball for the Royals, plus some situational hitting, enabled him to get the two-game sweep over the Brewers. Soler's shot went 442 feet, as I mentioned. Kelvin Gutierrez singled to get on base. And then pinch runner Gerard Dyson stole his 179th base with the Royals. That passes Frank White for fifth place all time in franchise history to stolen bases. Then Michael A. Taylor, he walked. Cam Gallagher bunted down the first baseline. That moved the runners from first and second to second and third. With Dyson on third with that outstanding speed, Nicky Lopez executed the squeeze play perfectly with another bunt. That's right, back-to-back bunts. And that's the second time the Royals have won a game, in essence, on back-to-back bunts. They did it in an extra inning game early in the year. And the Royals end up getting the lead and go on to win the ball game. And it's pretty impressive. Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes are outstanding pitchers of the Brewers, and the Royals beat both of them. And you look at the Royals' last four wins. They beat Lucas Giolito, Carlos Rodon, whose ERA was 0.6, Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burnes, and they collectively together, ERA is just over 2. And the Royals have beaten those four guys. Their last four wins have been against those very good pitchers. And here's one for you. Brewers starting pitchers Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes have started back-to-back games 15 times for the Brewers since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time ever that the Brewers have lost both of those games when those guys pitch back-to-back. First time ever. Royals first one to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's
exactly what you
had on, right? Yeah.
Exactly what you figure for an offense that had been struggling for a while. So it's pretty interesting. It's fun that the Royals are able to use small ball to win. Remind you a little bit about, 14 and 15. The Royals bullpen doing a great job. Greg Holland, Josh Domont. Royals with insurance runs in the eighth inning. The bullpen for the Royals, 2 earned runs over the last 25 innings. Brad Kelly goes 5 2/3, allowed 3 runs. And Stomont gets his 5th save. And the Royals do get today off, so that's good to help out the bullpen. And they'll be back in action coming up tomorrow. The Royals will, and try to keep things going the right direction. Mike Minor on the hill as the Royals will host the Tigers. It's kind of weird. The Royals, I don't think they hosted the Tigers yet this year. They've been in Detroit for 7 games already. Yeah. And they swept the 4 game and then lost the 3 game series, got swept. Whit Merrifield's batting average, by the way, is down to .250. Now, batting average isn't everything. Carlos Santana is on pace to walk 136 times this year, so he's getting on base, even though his batting average is only .250. The key is what's Santana's on-base percentage. It's pretty good. Royals offensively, Gutierrez with 2 hits, and he was the only one with more than 1 hit. And as we mentioned, Keller, decent, good enough to keep him in the game. Barlow gets the win, Holland the hold, and Stomont the save, and the bullpen gets it done. And Taylor with a big-time save in center field, and the Royals get it done. They're now 20-22. They win last night 6-4. Mike Matheny on the offense, finding a way to scratch across a few runs.
That's kind of what we got used to seeing in April. You're going to have these days when you're facing pitchers like we faced yesterday and Burnes today. I mean, those guys have good stuff, and they're not going to give up much. You know, fortunately, you know, Michael, you watch a guy get a 3-2 count, nice short swing. It's amazing how the ball jumps off his bat to give us a chance to kind of get some momentum going. And then late, we needed to manufacture. Goody gets on base, Dice does his thing. Cam does a nice job, and Nicky has been fantastic at doing what he did. And I left a little money on the table still out there that we needed, but those were huge runs after George gives us a chance by just wowing us. When he gets into one, it's just as impressive as maybe anybody in the league. But we love that style when we have to do it.
So Royals get the W. Also last night, almost becoming a regular occurrence, there was another no-hitter in baseball.
Ground ball to Gleyber Torres, and that'll do it. A no-hitter for Corey Kluber on a Wednesday night in Texas. Kluber becomes part of forever.
Corey Kluber, former Cy Young Award winner with the Indians. This is a crazy story. This is pretty funny, I think. It's a 6 no-hitter this year already in Major League Baseball. And Kluber no-hit the Texas Rangers. Mm-hmm. And that's noteworthy because do you know that the Rangers last night were giving out Corey Kluber bobbleheads?
I did.
And Corey Kluber no-hit them. Here's a crazy thing. Kluber only pitched one game for the Rangers last year and then blew out his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a whole promotion with Corey Kluber, and they were going to have it last year, but they had ordered the bobblehead, so they needed to do it sometime. Figured, well, go ahead and do it when Corey Kluber comes to pitch against them and he throws a no-no. Okie dokie. If I'm Corey Kluber, I'm asking for bobbleheads to be served up everywhere I can play.
Yeah.
So the second straight night we have a no-hitter. Spencer Turnbull had a no-hitter on Tuesday. Last night it was Corey Kluber. Kluber struck out 9, just one walk. It's the first Yankees no-hitter in 22 years and the 12th in franchise history. And it did come against the Rangers, who he was a member of last year. The modern record of most no-hitters in a single MLB season is 7. The all-time record is 8, and that was set during the dead ball era. This is the first time in Major League Baseball history that 3 teams have been no-hit twice. That's right. 6 no-hitters, but 3 teams have been no-hit. The Rangers twice, the Tigers twice, and the Cleveland Indians twice. That is a weird little nugget of a stat as well. When it comes to the no hitters, it is pretty crazy that we're having this many no hitters. But there's a little bit more to this story, and while some people think it's very exciting to have these no hitters and they think it's good for baseball, I'm going to explain here in a moment why it's not.
Yeah,
What do you think of these no hitters?
It's exciting, I think, for the teams and the players, but I mean, I don't think that's why. If you get 20 no hitters in a season, it's going to get old.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like you don't want. I mean, especially if it's your own team. If you're one of those 3 teams that's been no hit twice, I mean, what's the incentive to be excited about that? It's only exciting for one team and one player, right? And if my team's not doing it, I don't get overly excited about them.
Oh, yeah, right.
To be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Not
well, why would you?
My team, because I don't want to go to a game. And I mean, yeah, if you're there, if you're in the stadium, I think it's kind of cool because you got to witness it.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, it's like, how is that good for baseball to see all these teams being, and especially when you have 3 teams that have been no-hit twice? I mean, that's not good.
Right. No, it's
so,
not.
I mean, they're fun things. Obviously, it's a fun thing to cover and talk about, but. Yeah, I mean, if you get too many of them, it's going to become old hat, and everybody's going to get kind of tired of it.
We have been talking about this for a while. And stay with us. If you've been following our conversations about Tony La Russa getting mad about his player hitting a home run, we got some more information to discuss and reaction from some of his own players on the team. He talks about how they're all on the same page. They're not.
No.
So La Russa's lying to everybody. But I'm going to jump ahead because there's an article, and the timing of this is perfect. ESPN is doing a series on baseball and what's ailing baseball. So we're not, we've diagnosed it and talked about it, but we're not, I mean, it is a problem. Baseball needs to be aware of it. I think they're aware of it. Now, what they're going to do about it, I have no idea. And I came across this article that ESPN is doing a series on the state of baseball. And the title of the article is How the K has become the most destructive letter in Major League Baseball. And, of course, when we talk K in baseball, that means strikeouts. And I'll give you a quote here, all right? Now, first of all, you've had 6 no-hitters already, which means hitters aren't hitting. We talked about the Mariners yesterday. As a team, they're hitting 199. As a team, they're batting under 200. Here's a quote from Astros manager Dusty Baker, and he's played the game for years, played in the good old days, and he's managed for a long time. So you got to put a lot of credibility in some of the things he says. He says, and I quote, "It's unbelievable. I've talked to Theo Epstein, who is a consultant for Major League Baseball, regarding on-field issues about strikeouts. I've talked to other managers about it. I watched the game the other night. The first three innings, the ball wasn't put in play by either team. Everyone struck out, and I'd never seen that before. And Dusty Baker's been in this game for 4 or 5 decades. Reggie Jackson, Hall of Famer. Of course, you know Reggie struck out his share. He says it's embarrassing. He struck out more times than anyone in history. But do you know Reggie Jackson, usually about 125 strikeouts a year, and there's tons of guys that are hitting, striking out 150 to 200 times a year. Nolan Ryan, who was a strikeout king, of course, remember him, 5,714 strikeouts in his career. He said it's worrisome. Diamondbacks catcher Stephen Vogt said, it's weird and it's alarming. Scott Bradley, a baseball coach at Princeton, who's a former major league catcher, says it's crazy. It's not just in the big leagues. I saw some minor league statistics, and some team in low A ball struck out 70 times in a 3-game series. It's mind-boggling. So what happens when guys strike out? There's no action. Nothing happens. If you're a fan and you're watching TV, to me it's kind of like if tennis, all you do is you have two guys that are great at serving, and it's ace after ace. That's boring. That's boring tennis. And it was there for a while. I remember it was like tons of aces. I'm like, this isn't even that fun to watch. I want volleys. I want rallies. In baseball, you want hits. You want base runners, right? Yeah. The strikeout dilemma has MLB officials deeply concerned, given it is the primary reason for the game's sluggish pace of play and its troublesome lack of action on certain nights. All sorts of remedies are the focus of experiments on the minor league level, including moving the pitching mound back a foot. But those are just bandages. This is the game's biggest ailment. So when did this strikeout phenomenon begin? And more importantly, what is the solution to stop this K-train or at least slow it down? The strikeout rate has gone up just astronomically. Reggie Jackson said, I strike out more than anybody in the history of the game, almost 2,600 times, but I did it over 20 years. That's 125 strikeouts per year. A leadoff guy today strikes out 125 times. It's not productive. The game has changed so much and for the worse. Shane Bieber struck out more batters through April than any other pitcher in Major League history. Jacob DeGrom set a record of strikeouts through the first 4 starts of a season, tying Nolan Ryan's record through 5 starts. Corbin Burns struck out 58 without issuing a walk. Gerrit Cole of the Yankees then broke that record in regards to overall 61 straight strikeouts between walks. Aroldis Chapman struck out 29 batters in his first 12 innings, which means he struck out 29 of the 36 outs.
Mm-hmm.
He struck out 9 batters for every hit allowed. Indians reliever James Kedranchik has struck out 34 in 18 innings. And so what's the reason for this? According to this article, strikeouts have gone way up because one, pitcher stuff is spectacular, it's violent, and when located properly, largely unhittable. Many pitchers hunt strikeouts now. Hitters don't care if they strike out anymore, as they are taught to try to hit homers. And that's the biggest issue, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The baseball industry is taught, encouraged, and incentivized players to play this style. Like, we'll give you a whole bunch of bonuses for hitting home runs, but we're not going to give you bonuses for sacrifice bunts and moving guys over or getting stolen bases. Bradley says, the catcher who used to play in the majors, now a college coach, says, I love baseball, but there are times I won't even watch it because it's too dull. Nolan Ryan, who made a career and reputation of this very thing, striking out people, says it's turned me off to the game. The other thing is, guys nowadays, it used to be if you had a really good pitcher, had a good fastball, he threw maybe 94, 95. Now you've got basically everybody in a bullpen, especially, throws 95 or more. You've got lots of guys throwing 98, 99, 100. There's more pitches now that are over 100 miles an hour than ever before, which obviously gives you less reaction time, makes it harder on hitters. But other people have said the bigger issue is not necessarily how fast they throw. Because you're a fastball hitter, you just got to speed up your swing. It's the nasty secondary stuff that these guys got now to where they're throwing it a lot more often and thus keeping hitters completely off balance.
Yeah.
So that'd be another one. The other problem, of course, one of the biggest problems that baseball has, and that is they don't care if they strike out anymore. And they're not worried about putting the ball in play like the Royals did in 15 and won a World Series doing it that way. They're worried about hitting the long ball. You remember the whole saying after Maguire Sosa, chicks dig the long ball, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It used to be that when you struck out, it was in the story that George Brett always got ticked off when he struck out. It was like the most embarrassing thing you could do, and he didn't strike out a lot. And now guys are like, well, whatever. No big deal. They don't care anymore.
No.
It used to be on 3-0, you were going to go ahead and take a pitch. Now, you better not, because next thing you know, you're back to 3-1 and 3-2. So you got to be aggressive. That's one good thing, but then you're aggressive, and then you might chase. This really interesting problems that Major League Baseball has, according to some now, the way the ball's been made this year is made even harder for hitters to hit, because pitchers now there's a little bit of a substance on the ball, allowing pitchers to do some really wild things that hitters haven't ever seen before in regards to excessive movement of pitches, which I've seen some nasty pitches as well. The average batting average, it used to be that if you remember if you hit 300 or better, you were a great hitter, right? Mm-hmm. You remember 250 was the Mendoza line. That's what they kind of was calling it. 250. If you're hitting 250, you're an average baseball player. You hit below 250, you're not a good hitter, right? 250 is average, and that's not great, but it's average. But if you hit below 250, you're a bad hitter. Do you know what the batting average, the average for all Major League Baseball players this year, for all the teams, you put all their at-bats together, you figure out their batting average. Do you know what the Major League Baseball batting average is this year?
It's below 250.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to say like 224.
236. Yeah. 236. And as I said, the Mariners are hitting 199.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me how that's exciting for people to go to a game and just watch a whole bunch of people. Listen, I go to a high school game, and I'm bored out of my mind sometimes. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, yeah.
I go to a high school baseball game, and it's walk, hit batter, air, wild pitch, pass ball, air. I mean, oh, there's a drive to left field. It's like, oh, that was fun. At least something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's high school. And I'm not trying to pile on high schoolers, because they're learning how to pitch. They're learning how to play. But I will say this, umpires can really help at the high school level, because you're not an umpire for a Major League Baseball game. Some umpires at high school level don't get that. Like, widen the zone and make hitters swing the bat. All right, widen the zone a little bit and give them the corners and maybe even an inch or two off the plate. And then that allows, there's all kinds of great things that happen when an umpire at the high school level opens up the zone just a little bit. There's so many positives that come out of it. First of all, the first positive is that you make the batter have to swing a little bit more instead of going up there hoping for a walk. That's one. Two, you lessen the wear and tear on pitchers' arms by giving them those close calls for strikes. Three, it speeds up the pace of the game, which fans like, because they don't want to be there forever. Trust me, I'm one of those. And five, that's four things I gave you. Five, defenders are more on their toes ready to play, because they know that there's a better chance for the ball to be put in play instead of every single batter is either a walk, a strikeout, or a hit batter.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a game the other day where there were six runs, no hits. Scored in an inning. Six runs, no hits. Okay, so that's high school baseball. And you can make valid excuses, and rightfully so. Not necessarily excuse, they're facts. These are kids that are learning how to pitch. Kids are learning how to hit. Kids learning how to play defense. They are anywhere from 14 to 18 years of age, okay? But in the big leagues, these guys are striking out. And they're not even – it's one thing that they have a batting average of 236, but they're not even putting the ball in play so the guy can actually throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
They're just striking out. And Ryan Lefevre was on with us, the voice of the Royals, a few weeks ago, and he talked about how he's seen players' careers ruined. Because we were talking about Andrew Benintendi. He's one that got messed up because of this whole thing. He talked about it. That with the Red Sox, one of the reasons he was deemed expendable is they didn't think they could fix his swing. And he's 26 years of age, and the Royals traded for him. And he's adjusted things with the Royals, and he's getting base hits. He's not hitting for as much power, but he's getting base hits. He's hitting the ball kind of like he used to. It's just not hitting it over the fence. And that's because Andrew Benintendi was taught in a small ballpark in Fenway to lift the ball. What are you doing when you're lifting the ball? What are you trying to do? You're trying to hit the ball in the air. You develop a loop in your swing. You're not – we always talk about it. I've coached baseball for many years now. At lower levels, and one of the things we say is level swing. You know, if you make and don't try to kill it, nice compact level swing, you'd be amazed how far the ball will go. The pitch will take care of it off the bat. All right, you don't have to swing for the fences. You'd be amazed at home runs that actually are nice short compact swings. They're not these gigantic monster swings. I mean, Jorge Soler is an exception to the rule. Okay, and he's also a big leaguer. But Major League Baseball right now has a gigantic problem. The game's already boring, and it's becoming more boring.
Mm-hmm.
And when guys are not putting a play, like last night was exciting with the Royals because, yeah, Soler hit a home run. That was big, right? Tied the game. But how did the Royals – well, here's the other thing that happens when you put the ball in play. You have better chance to have great defensive plays like Michael A. Taylor last night. More balls in play mean more chances for defenders to make great plays. Mm-hmm. It means more chances for guys to get on base, clearly. It also means more chances for stolen bases. There's chances for more hit and runs. And teams just don't play small ball anymore. It's become extremely boring. And so when you watch the Royals last night, they'd hit a gigantic home run and tie it, and then they get a hit, then a walk, and next thing you know, like, bunts, and then bunt again. That's it. That's an unwritten rule, isn't it? You can't bunt back-to-back times. Well, what do you know? It accomplished a run that gave them the lead, and they went on to win the game. What happened and what caused baseball to get so caught up in the home runs to where they started to even forget about what's really matters the most, and that's winning? Like, it's okay to have a couple guys that can hit the ball 1,000 feet. That's fine. But you don't need every guy to do that.
Yeah.
And it is embarrassing when a leadoff guy is trying to hit home runs. Like, oh, Jose Altuve is an example. I mean, he don't bat at leadoff, I don't think, right now. But he did for a portion of his career. And he's hitting tons of homers. And everybody's like, well, that's awesome. I'm like, that's not the leadoff guy's role. It shouldn't be. I mean, yeah, great. He had a leadoff homer. Shouldn't he be batting third so that in the first inning there's a guy on when he hits a home run?
Yeah.
And so forth and so on. And you don't see guys steal bases hardly anymore. The run game has been shut down. Part of that is because of better pitching. Part of that's the analytics. It's part of the more defensive shifts, and guys are not learning to hit the ball the other way, or they're not learning to, you know, let's try to lay a bunt down the third base line because everybody shifted to the other side. And I know it's not as easy as it sounds, but hitters have to adapt is my point. Hitters have to adapt, and hitters are not adapting. And in this story by ESPN, they said, how are we going to get this fixed? How are we going to get it back the other way? Because this is not good for baseball. The younger generation is tuning out baseball. Not everybody, but they're a good chunk of younger generation. And even me, and I'm 45, and I grew up, and I love baseball. But it's becoming, like, why do I even need to bother? There's really no need to watch until the very end if it's a close game. And I'm waiting for action. I'm waiting, and nothing's happening. Oh, another strikeout, yay. And so, oh, another pitching change, yay. When is the ball going to be put in play? And you're just not seeing teams doing the little things, moving runners, putting the ball in play, getting runners on. You have to actually, you know, hit the ball to get on. And now we're seeing more no-hitters. It's not a coincidence that we're seeing 6 no-hitters when teams are all they're doing is trying to hit a home run.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Not all these teams have, like, set records for home runs in franchise history the last 5 years or so. And obviously, they don't all win the championship, do they? They don't all go to the playoffs. So how do you reel it back in? And I saw a couple players in this article talk about until you incentivize other things in baseball. Like, there's incentives to hit so many home runs. You get a performance bonus for hitting so many home runs. You get a performance bonus for getting so many RBIs. Sometimes it's stolen bases. Sometimes it's runs scored, you know, and strikeouts for a pitcher, saves, wins, whatever. But what about incentive bonuses for so many sack bunts or so many stolen bases or so many walks? If you get 100 walks in a season, you get an incentive. Now, I know that's not putting the ball in play, but at least you're getting a runner on.
Mm-hmm.
You have an incentive for having the lowest strikeout ratio on the team. Whoever has the lowest strikeout ratio on the team, you get an extra $1 million. Think about that. That would be competition,
yeah,
which would make you want to put the ball in play. And that's what works so great in 15. But until you incentivize these things, players are going to keep doing what? They're going to try to keep hitting homers.
Yeah.
And so that leads us into the whole Tony La Russa situation. Like that segue? So Tony La Russa, if you haven't heard what we've been talking about this week, Tony La Russa, manager of the Chicago White Sox, was all mad because one of his players hit a home run in a 15-4 game against the Twins the other night, and the Twins had a position player that came in to pitch the final half inning in the ninth inning. They had waved the white flag and had given up. And so there was a 3-0 count, and the hitter for the White Sox gets a 47-mile-an-hour pitch, and he cranks it out of the ballpark and hits a home run. And Tony La Russa, after the game, threw his player under the bus, said that he'll learn there's consequences for this. He actually applauded the Twins for throwing behind his own player the very next night, which is just ridiculous. And he threw his player under the bus for hitting a home run. Now, there are old school people that say, you know, you don't swing on a 3-0 count. Did he defy the manager and he had to take sign on 3-0 up 15-4, so forth and so on. Some of the old school baseball traditionalists think that Tony La Russa, they applaud him and they say, well, you know, he's old school and we respect that and this and that. But here's the thing. Here's the thing, and I brought this up yesterday because one of the things we try to do on the show is provide different perspectives instead of just looking at one side of the story. And yesterday I brought this up. All the outrage by Tony La Russa and old school baseball traditionalists, the outrage is that a guy didn't take a pitch on 3-0 in a 15-4 game when they are paid incentives and get bigger contracts because of the long ball, and that's why we have a high strikeout rate. So it's harder to put the ball in play ever before. Now you got a cookie down the middle from a position player, and you're supposed to take it. And it's a 3-0 pitch, and you're supposed to take it. And the talk is that, well, that's disrespecting the game. It makes the mockery of the game. It's 15-4. The Twins had already given up. They waved the white flag. And here's a question. Isn't it disrespectful to the game when you give up? Isn't it disrespectful to the game when you bring in a guy that isn't a major league pitcher to actually pitch on a major league mound when you had five relievers available? Did you know that, everyone? The Minnesota Twins had five relievers available in their bullpen to get three outs in a 15-4 game. So what did they do? They quit. They quit. They gave up, and they're like, we'll just save all five of those arms for tomorrow, which I'm not saying that's not a bad idea. Say, that's fine. I get it. But they had plenty of arms, real arms. They weren't. Their bullpen was not exhausted. They have relievers that were available to throw one inning, okay? You always have a mop-up guy. Well, the mop-up guy they decided was going to be a position player. He comes in, and he serves up a 3-0 pitch down the middle, 47 miles an hour, and Germán Mercedes, in his first year in big league ball, he's a 28-year-old journeyman, played internationally, he's having a great year, and he's supposed to take it for a strike. He's supposed to just watch it or take ball four. And as we just talked about, isn't the idea to hit home runs in this league? That's what everybody's being told to do. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about fans wanting the ball to be in play, and then everybody's freaking out and mad because a guy swung on a 3-0 pitch.
Yeah.
It's contradictory. It's hypocrisy. It's ridiculous. So five relievers were available. They quit. The Twins quit. And as I said yesterday, why not just walk off the field and say, we're done. It's over. Tell the umpire, we're done. Because you do risk that guy getting hurt. You risk a batter getting hit by a pitch. You're risking a catcher getting hurt, an umpire getting hurt. There's no point to keep playing. If one team's given up, then just be done with it. Just be done with it. Instead, this happens, and the guy that hits the home run is ripped by his own manager. But there's no ripping the Twins for quitting.
No.
There's no ripping the Twins for making a mockery of the game by bringing in a guy that doesn't pitch to pitch. Where's the angst and anger towards them? Because that's what's, to me, that's just as disrespectful of the game, the so-called unwritten rules. But here's some reaction. This is really, and by the way, this is a good point. Dusty and I talked about this after the show yesterday. Okay, the Twins gave up. That's true. They gave up. But here's the thing. Do you know what's happened in Major League Baseball this year when it comes to comebacks? The Royals, just 2 weeks ago, the Royals pulled two of their starting players down 7-0 after seven innings. The Royals scored seven in the last two innings and had a chance to win the game. Did you know that the LA Dodgers, 2 weeks ago, they were up 13-0? That lead went to 13-11 in a couple of innings. Did you know the Braves were down 8-0 over this past weekend and almost came back and won the game? The point being is that although it is unlikely that you're going to come back from a 15-4 deficit, the point is, even if the other team says they're quitting, let's say the White Sox go ahead and say, well, we don't want to disrespect the game. And they take pitches right down the middle and they strike out, right? And the next inning, they give up 11 and it's a tie game. I know it's unlikely.
Yeah.
I know it's unlikely. But with all of these big leads that teams have been blowing, I just gave you three examples, actually four counting the Royals. Why shouldn't you add more runs to the board? 15-4, yeah, you shouldn't blow it. That should never happen. I get it. Neither should 8-0, 7-0, 13-0, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
So you're mad at your player for trying. You're mad at your player for trying to hit a home run, which is what you're teaching everybody to do. And you're throwing your own player under the bus.
and your team is in first place, and you've now completely took away from what your team is doing by making it public. I just don't understand Tony La Russa's thinking in this at all, other than he's apparently really upset with the way the game is headed. Here is some reaction. Tony La Russa says, "Believe me, you can bet on this. Everybody in the clubhouse, in that locker room, understands where I'm coming from, and we're all on the same page." Well, I want to be Tony La Russa's bookie. No, I don't know. I want to bet the opposite. Because Tim Anderson's reaction, this is a shortstop for the White Sox. Here's his thoughts on Instagram about Tony La Russa, his manager, being upset with Yermin Mercedes for hitting a home run on a 3-0 pitch. Tim Anderson said, "The game wasn't over. Keep doing you, Big Daddy." And Mercedes goes, "Yes, sir. Let's do it, baby." That's two players, one that hit the home run, the other, that's a teammate. Lance Lynn, a starting pitcher of the White Sox, says, "If a position player is on the mound, there are no rules. Let's get the damn game over with. And if you have a problem with whatever happened, then put a pitcher out there." I agree with that.
Yeah, for the other team, yeah.
I agree with that.
Yep.
Then, you know, and basically, Lance Lynn's saying, "You're going to get all riled up with our own guy. Hey, Skip, why don't you get all mad at the other team? And you're talking about these unwritten rules. Well, how the rules really don't apply when it's not even a real pitcher going out there anyway." Jason Kipnis, he's been in the bigs for a very long time. He was an all-star for the Indians. He goes, he put on Twitter, "Here's a 3-0 thought. You get to save your bullpen, but we can't pad our stats? It's hard to hit a home run in the show. You work hard for the opportunity to even try to get into the lineup. This game knocks hitters down daily. If it throws us a bone on a 3-0 on a 47-mile-an-hour pitch, please, please, we're not supposed to take that? We're supposed to just sit there and take the pitch and not take that pitch and hit it out of the park?" And I saw somebody else put out there on social media, "If you can't swing 3-0, if that's an unwritten rule now, you can't swing 3-0. You know, the game's out of hand. It's a position player. You can't swing 3-0. So then once you do that, on the flip side, if it's a 15-4 game and you get up 0-2 in the count, you can't throw a third strike. It's 0-2. You can't throw a strike 0-2. You're not supposed to try to hit the ball 3-0. So why should you be allowed to throw a strike on 0-2? That ain't right." Well, that was an interesting way of looking at it. Interesting way. I'd be all for moving the game along and getting out. So I'd be like, yeah, I think you probably should go ahead and try to throw a strike. The point being is, if there's unwritten rules on you can't go 3-0, then you're allowing the pitcher to throw two straight strikes. So what if your main Mercedes the other day does what Tony Russo said? He takes 3-0, and it's a fastball. It's a strike, 3-1. And then he takes a big, fat, juicy pitch, 47 miles an hour. He doesn't swing, and it's 3-2. What's he supposed to do 3-2? Is he going to have a take on again? Is he going to be allowed to swing away on 3-2? Like, if the point I'm trying to make is, if Mercedes hit that home run on a 3-2 pitch, are we talking about this today or the last 3 days? No, but what's the difference?
There isn't one. I mean,
there isn't one. It's still a position player throwing a fat pitch.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to just give up and give him an out? But the other team quit and gave up, so you're supposed to quit trying to score when you're still playing the game? If it's 3-1, is he taking?
Based on that.
If it's 0-2, do you think Mercedes is taking 0-2?
Oh, no.
Of course not.
No.
Is he taking 0-1? I'd say no.
No.
So when it's 3-0, he has to take in that weird situation. But if it's 3-2, he's supposed to do his job and not strike out, right?
I would say anything up to, if it's 3-0, 3-1, anything up to the full count, he's probably supposed to take.
Right? I would guess so.
I'm guessing that's what they're talking about here.
So
3-2, if he jacks one out, what's the difference?
Well, that's
he's
what
still
I'm saying.
One pitch away from being walked.
Exactly.
Right? Or struck out. Like
Save the game's credibility by taking two strikes and then you hit a home run? What the heck's the difference?
Yeah, there's not. There's a perceived difference based on the old school thinking, but there's not a difference.
No. No. It's
you made a comment that kind of struck me, right? Like Tony La Russa says these things because he doesn't like the way the game's going. You didn't have to come back, dude.
That's right.
You've been gone for 10 years from this game, and you decided to come back and manage. Okay, if you don't like the way the game's being played right now,
you can retire.
That's on you. Yep. That's not on the players that are playing right now.
Good point.
And if you don't like these things and you want to continue with these unwritten rules and things like that, and I know as a whole, the White Sox are probably glad Tony La Russa is their manager, right? He's got experience and he's got wins under his belt. And but it's like, dude, you've been out of here for 10 years and you decided to come back and manage. Like,
right.
If you don't like it, that is not on baseball today.
Well, I saw White Sox fans are really upset about this, and they're upset with their manager as well. And because one of the things that they've been arguing, and I applaud the White Sox fans when they point this out. Our team's in first place and one of the best records in baseball, and our manager has just caused a whole big hubbub that didn't need to be done. It could have been done behind closed doors. You could have not thrown your teammate. You could have avoided throwing one of your players under the bus. You could have avoided this whole distraction. You could have taken care of it in-house. Like, and he's old school, so now, you know, if La Russa is going to be so critical of his player about hitting a home run on 3-0 and disrespecting the game, and there's these unwritten rules, I thought there was an unwritten rule that you don't throw your player under the bus publicly. I thought it was all supposed to stay in the clubhouse and locker room, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Tony La Russa believes that. Well, he didn't do that. Why isn't he? And he is being criticized for this, by the way, and he should. If you're going to criticize Mercedes for not doing it old school style, and you want to criticize him and say that he didn't, you know. And by the way, he's a first-year major leaguer. He's not a veteran, okay? Yeah. He may not know better. I don't know. You're going to be critical of the guy, and you're going to talk about him being basically, you're implying he's unprofessional. It's mocking the game. He's not happy with the fact he may have had a take sign. We don't know that for sure. And you're going to say all these things, and you're old school, and you want to be the way it was, and you don't like the way the game's going. You call respecting the game and so forth and the opponent. Whatever happened to respecting your own player on your own team and not say this publicly and go in the clubhouse and deal with it one-on-one about whether he didn't take the ball or whether he took the take sign or whether he ignored it, whether or not he hit the home run, you're not happy about it. There was no need for Tony La Russa to make this public. There was no need whatsoever. He could have easily called the Twins manager and say, hey, man, sorry, I don't really want him to do that. There was a take sign. He hit it. Why did La Russa make this public? Because his team's not struggling. I understand trying to create a distraction when your team stinks. Teams have done that. Players have done it. Coaches do it all the time. Why did he? I don't understand the reasoning why he did this. Because it contradicts. If you're all about old school and you're about respecting the game, aren't you supposed to respect your players enough to handle this in-house? It wasn't like he was asked all these different individual questions. La Russa volunteered a lot of this information. Mm-hmm. So he's absolutely, one, an irritable older man, or he's tired of the way the game is going, which is crazy because he only managed 40 games in his return to the Diamond as a manager. And he could have easily handled that in-house, or maybe he has a problem with his players and they don't get along and they're winning in spite of him. But whatever the case may be, Tony La Russa is all upset with a guy who didn't handle his business in the way he thought he should have, and yet many people could say, hello, Tony. Can you call the kettle black here? You didn't handle things well at all. You made it worse as a manager, and aren't you as a manager supposed to make things better for your team? Aren't you supposed to deal with something and say, I got the body armor. As a manager, I'll take all the arrows and the bullets, and I'm going to protect my team and my players, even if I'm upset with them. And yeah, you might yell at him in the dugout and a camera catches it. Well, we talked about it before. People are already going against Bill Snyder. When Bill Snyder started calling out players at the end, that's when people were like, whoa, what are we doing here? And I think that was easy to figure out. Bill Snyder was unhappy. He was frustrated with the younger players. There was a bigger divide. And perhaps that's exactly what Tony La Russa is going through here. There's a divide in the clubhouse. They're winning in spite of him. They might listen to his... I mean, he calls for a reliever to come in. What are you going to do? Not come out? Of course, they're going to follow that. But right now, I think some of his players are laughing behind his back. They're publicly... Listen, should Tim Anderson, Lance Lynn, and other White Sox feel bad about publicly commenting on this when their manager took it public?
No.
They shouldn't.
No.
And kudos to them. They have a voice. They have an opinion. Now, they may still keep winning games, and it won't matter, and this is a bump in the road, but I think it's something to keep an eye on because Tony La Russa sometimes can grate on players. That's happened before. And now he's 76 years of age, returning to the game, and he's making a big hubbub about something that honestly was not that big a deal at all until he made it a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it basically against his team, and then he
he says he had no issue with the Twins throwing a ball at one of his players.
Yeah, you can't.
It's like, who is your player? Are you a member of the Twins organization? Because I thought you're the manager of the White Sox. It's just not something you hardly, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before. A manager commending the other team for throwing at my player after my player hit a home run against a guy and against a team that had quit, and I'm all mad about the guy hitting a home run. Oh, my gosh. Sign me up. I want more players to hit home runs because that's what baseball wants, right? Wait a minute. I'm Mercedes. I'm taught to lift the ball. I'm taught to hit a home run. Oh, but I can't hit it in certain situations. Well, I'm taught to keep things public. I'm told to not rat out my teammates. I'm supposed to not criticize the manager. I'm supposed to talk about closed doors. And my manager goes out and rips me and throws me under the bus and tells me about this and this and this, and he's going to learn from it. Then I go out the next night, and a guy throws at me, and my manager still doesn't have my back. If I'm Hermann Mercedes, I got a big couple birds for my manager. I'm saying it. If I were in his position, where is... Now, I don't know the conversations La Russa's having in between. So, you know, that makes it difficult. But all the stuff we know and what we've seen with our own eyes publicly, which, by the way, goes back to should have never been made public in the first place by your manager. If I'm Mercedes, I'm like, whose back do you have? I'm busting my butt for you. I'm having a great year. I'm saving your bacon because one of our best outfielders is out for the season, and I came up and saved your butt. I'm playing great. I'm a rookie of the year. I'm 28. I'm making league minimum. That's what he's making. And, oh, by the way, you don't think if he hits more home runs, he's going to get a contract somewhere or get a raise or get arbitration or get a big contract? Hello? So I got a chance to hit a cookie, and I'm getting vilified for this by my own manager, not the other team's manager, not the other team, my own manager. And then I go out there the next night, and I'm playing in place of a very good player who was hurt, and they throw a pitch behind my back, and he tells me that he has no issue with it? You have no issue with the other team throwing at me? I mean, in real life, you would quit your job and go to somebody else that would take care of you. That's what you do in real life. But in baseball, you're under contract, so you just can't quit. And then go to another team. That would be career suicide in sports. It is really, there's so many strong words I want to say. I mean, when you really start looking about this whole situation, it's like, who are you employed by?
Yeah. You can't do the second part of it. Like, there's many managers have called out people, right?
Sure.
And this not like a new thing. Coaches, managers, sometimes you don't like it, but it happens. But you cannot publicly go out and say you have no problem with somebody throwing at one of your players. I don't care who it is and what happened, right? How many times did we get frustrated that Ned Yost would never, like, put the blame on a player, right? He would always just shoulder all of it.
He did. And that's why players loved him, and that's why they played hard for him.
And he would just take it, right? And it's like, just say something bad about the guy because he's playing terrible right now, and he just never would do it. And
he stuck with Escobar in the leadoff spot when everybody told him he needs to move him, or he moved him back to the leadoff spot after he put Zobrist up there. Remember that?
Yeah. And it's just like, I mean...
He had his players' backs.
He did, and you can't. I mean, you just can't go out there and say you're cool with the opponent throwing at one. Or not. He didn't throw at him. I understand.
Yes, I have no issue with what the Twins did.
Yeah, and it's just like, first of all, I would. The way you answer that, if you're asked that question, is like that things happen in baseball. We've moved on from it. You don't say I don't have any problem with what happened.
Right.
Okay. Because I mean, you know. Based on what he said the day before, he doesn't have any problem with what happened because he's old school.
Right.
You can tell that just by what he said in public the day before. So you know he doesn't have a problem with it, but you can't go out in public and say that.
Right.
About one of your own players. I mean, at some point you got to have their back. And he was like, if you go out and say he's going to have to suffer consequences within our family, now you've contradicted because those consequences came from the other family, family.
Thank you.
He never said anything about suffering consequences from the Twins.
No, he did not.
He said it about our own family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't, I mean.
And what consequence? The guy was in the lineup the next night.
I know. That's what I want to know. It's like,
you were so up in arms and so mad, threw the guy under the bus and got mad for hitting homer on a 3-0 pitch, and you're all mad, and you're having, and then he's in the lineup the next night. You really want to send a message, you don't play him the next night.
Yeah.
And I don't know. If he didn't play him the next night, there might have been a team mutiny. Because you can see that from these reactions of the players.
The players are going to be like, okay, That might be your feeling about this, but there's going to be some issues if this just is your feeling about everything in the world in our clubhouse right now.
There's a 48-year age difference between Germain Mercedes and Tony La Russa. And, oh, by the way, they're from completely different descents and everything else. And that's and there's White Sox got guys 21, 22, 23 on their team, I'm sure. There's a 50-plus year gap between the manager and the players. And a good way to maybe manage that gap is to respect them enough to not throw them under the bus publicly. Just a thought.
Yeah.
And you're in your first place. Like, I get it if you're trying to create a distraction because you're so god-awful. But
a lot of fire under them, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, but
right.
That's definitely not what the case is.
Instead, you're distracting from what the great year you're having. Even your own fans are saying, well, we're not talking about what's really cool. We're in first place and playing good baseball, and we're talking about manager mad with our own guy hitting a home run. Okie dokie. Former Iowa State guard Jalen Coleman Landis, 6'4", 187-pound senior shooting guard originally from Indianapolis, announced on social media late yesterday morning that he is joining KU. How many scholarships does KU have? He's known as a shooter, a scrappy defender who can use his length and strength to guard the 1-4 positions. During his lone season with Iowa State last year, remember, Iowa State didn't win a Big 12 conference game. The former DePaul and Illinois player who earned honorable mention all Big 12 honors was second on the team at Iowa State with 14 points a game, 10th in the Big 12. He shot 40% from three, which is good. He is a career 37% three-point shooter. That's pretty good. In two games against KU, both losses, he made 12 out of 25 shots. That's 48%. He was 6 of 14 for 3, and he scored 20 points in each game against, obviously, a very good team in KU. He becomes a 10th new player to join the Jayhawks this offseason and puts the Jayhawks on pace to be one scholarship over the limit of 13. However, if Jalen Wilson or Ochai Agbaji, obviously, if they stay in the draft, or Remy Martin, then things change, and there'll be an opening, or they'll be back to the regular amount that they need and won't be over. So we'll see how this all plays out. But this is interesting because I don't know if I read this correctly, that I think it is. Because Curtis Siebel, a friend of mine from 810 WHB in Kansas City, Curtis loves numbers and stats and really informational statistics that people, little neat nuggets. I like those things too. He said yesterday that Jalen Coleman Lands, who KU just got as a transfer, and we mentioned he used to be at DePaul in Illinois, so he sat out time. Do you know, according to Curtis Siebel, Jalen Coleman Lands is older than Devin Booker? And Devin Booker has been in the NBA for 6 seasons.
Yeah.
Does that
this
sound right?
This is his 7th season with a Division I program.
That's crazy.
He played 2 years at Illinois.
He's 24.
Played 2 years at Illinois, had to sit out a year to transfer to DePaul, redshirted what would have been his junior year, but his senior year in school, and then played at DePaul as a senior.
Uh-huh.
Because as a junior, actually. Then played at Iowa State as an actual sixth-year senior.
Uh-huh.
And now he's a seventh-year senior because COVID gave a year of extra eligibility.
And if there's ever a guy that needed it, it was that guy.
Yeah, the guy that needs his seventh year of eligibility to play at a third different school.
It's true. I looked it up. I figured K-Dog's all over it. He doesn't make stuff up.
Yeah.
Jalen Coleman Lands, who has just landed with KU as a transfer, is 24 years of age. Devin Booker, an all-star with the Phoenix Suns, is 24 years of age. Devin Booker has 6 full NBA seasons under his belt, and Jalen Coleman Lands will be playing KU with KU next season at the age of 24.
Yeah.
And probably
it's
won't be a starter either. He'll be a backup.
When you look at his, because I looked up his basketball reference or his sports reference page where they put the college people, and it's like, guy was a freshman and played minutes at Illinois in 2015-16. Like, what? No, I mean, the only other guy I can think of off the top of my head, and this was because of injuries, and he actually didn't even go to college for a year, was Eugene Edgerson at Arizona, right? Like, he was part of the team that won the title in 97. Then he was also part of the 2001 Final Four team.
Yeah.
That's the only guy I can think of in my mind that's anywhere near what this is.
That's funny because, you know, the running joke at KU, and it's all over, it's still out there, is like that Perry Ellis, you know, looked like he was 30 every year, and that Perry Ellis played at KU for 8 years. This is actually Perry Ellis.
Yeah.
He's going to be 20. I don't know when his birthday is, but he's 24. I wonder, I wonder. He's going to be 25. He's going to be 25 in 2 months.
Yeah,
he's going to be 25 when he's playing. He's going to be 25 when he's playing for KU. You know, I'm going to apologize to our listeners out there because I've used this. I've said it's hard for coaches. Now, I know Bill Self makes all this money and Calipari and all these guys, and people just think they throw this talent together and then it works out perfectly, and now it's tough because you got to re-recruit guys left and right. And I apologize because I was inaccurate with my information recently. I said, can you imagine? You're Bill Self, and you think it's easy what he does. He's got to mold and get guys to work together that are 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21 years of age. My bad! 22, 23, 24, 25 years of age. Spy McKyluke that came to Kansas, he played his freshman year. He was 17. Mm-hmm. If he was on this team when he came and Landis, there'd be an eight-year difference. You think there's a 3-4-year difference as big. Eight-year difference. Lands might be older than one of the coaches on the KU staff, for all I know.
Yeah.
I'm joking, of course, but that's crazy, man.
Graduate assistant he could be.
Yeah. In an unrelated story, actually a related story, Jalen Coleman Lands is also going to be a graduate assistant. That's nuts. I want to see his transcripts.
Yeah. Has he graduated yet? From goodness. One of these places?
You would hope so, somehow, some way. That is nuts. He's going to be 25 in July. That's crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Stanley Cup playoffs continuing. Last night, the Flames beat the Canucks 6-2. Bruins over the Capitals 3-2 double overtime. Bruins are up 2-1 in that series. Hurricanes shut out the Predators 3-0. They're up 2-0 in that series. Jets over the Oilers 4-1. And the Avs, our hockey team, until the Kraken get going next year, they beat the Blues 6-3. They're up 2-0. Tonight, Panthers Lightning game 3. Panthers trail 2-0. Penguins Islanders game 3 tonight in that one. And Canadians Maple Leafs, that's game 1. That's so weird that they're doing game 1 and these other series are in game 3 already. The Golden Knights are taking on the Wild game 3 in Minnesota tonight as well. So that's a look at the Stanley Cup playoffs. I did receive a text from somebody. We were talking about strikeouts. And we mentioned we started out talking about softball in the show today.
Mm-hmm.
There were 34 combined strikeouts last night in that softball game between Hoisington and Beloit. And this person tells me, I'm not going to say who they are, they said it was a boring game, but it was exciting because I was there watching it while it was still boring. Let me get this right. It was boring, but it was exciting because I was there, but it was still boring. Make up your mind, man.
Yeah.
But I get it. I think I do get it. Well, it was boring because there wasn't hardly in the ball wasn't put in play. It was boring, but it was exciting because both pitchers were on top of their games. So you're like, which one's going to crack first, right? And then it was still boring at the end of the day when you realize how many balls are actually put in play. So I do understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% get it because I was watching it on the Game Changer on the live feed, right? I wasn't actually there watching it. So it was just like, oh, nobody scored again?
Again? 9 innings in a row? Nobody scored?
It's just, I mean, I get it. It's not fun to be at a... to be watching a 0-0 game on a live feed. I would tell you that right now.
Right. Now you're at the game.
If you're at the game, you understand what you're seeing, right? Yeah. You understand that this is an outstanding performance by these pitchers.
Two great pitchers.
And you can appreciate that part of it.
Yes.
But when you're not actually visually seeing it, it's like how good, were they just swinging at bad stuff and that's how it was good? Or, when you're not actually watching it.
That type of game is good because it happens very rarely. You know what I'm saying? That's why that game makes it good. That's why no-hitters we were talking about earlier, what makes it great is that they don't happen very often. So that makes it very exciting to be a part of. And then when you have games that are a slugfest, that's exciting. But if every game was a slugfest, it'd get old, right?
Yeah.
And if every game ends up being a 0-0 game through 9 innings, that would get old, right? And if every Major League Baseball game every night there's a no-hitter, that would get old, right? Because that's where we're going with that we started with earlier. The no-hitters, are they as special as they once were if you keep having more and more of them on a regular basis? They're not as special. Is a pitcher's duel special if you have that almost every softball game? No, it's not.
No.
But it isn't always that way at all. So that's what made that, according to this person, I think what he's trying to say is that's what made it exciting because it was something we hadn't seen all year or maybe ever that since he's been going to games, and that was a rare double shutout. Both pitchers had gone 9 innings without giving up a run. I mean, that's pretty – and then on top of that –
the stress and the pressure of your season's on the line
yeah.
on top of
yeah.
that does make that exciting.
Yeah.
But if most games were like that, then that wouldn't be nearly as exciting. It would be blah, blah, boring, boring. Nobody's hitting the ball, and there's a whole bunch of strikeouts. So I totally get what that guy is saying,
100%.
No doubt. Yeah. But and that's the point of whether it's a slugfest, whether it's a low-scoring 1-0 defensive game or great pitcher's duel or no-hitters or perfect games. When they happen from time to time, that makes you appreciate them, whether they're really – any action or not, you kind of appreciate it. But when it becomes the norm, where it becomes 10-9 baseball games all the time and slugfest, or it becomes a norm where it's always pitcher's duels, or it becomes a norm when there's no hitters every other night, then it just becomes old hat. It's like we've seen this movie before, and there's really, why do I need to watch it anymore?
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, lots that we covered today, especially from a baseball perspective, but really, really interesting. The different ways you can look at some of these things, whether it be major leagues or high school softball or baseball. And then on top of it, we've got a guy that's about ready to retire that's joining the KU Jayhawk basketball team. I'm joking. Some guys retire when they're 25.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.